the chorus, it gets everybody involved.
I'm Erin Keen.
I'm Sean Cannon. This is These Miracles Work. So in the first episode, we talked about how the band was riding pretty high, you know, while they were making Stay Positive. They had some success, you know, they were ready to build on that. Well, now we're going to look at how exactly success changed the dynamics of the work, particularly when it comes to the songwriting.
So you remember in the first episode when Craig talked about that whirlwind of touring? That ended up being a major factor in the way Stay Positive developed in a few important ways, some of which were purely practical in nature.
We were touring a lot, and it was, kind of pushing further and further. And it became obvious that we weren't going to come off the road for a while. So if we wanted to have an album out fairly quickly, we needed to start writing on the road. And we did, and actually in a very good way. Like Franz and Tad and myself would go in the hotel rooms after the shows, and like, you know, we had these acoustic demos we were just making on laptops, I guess, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, we had a little M-Box Pro Tools thing and just did it that way.
All the time on the road clearly affected Stay Positive in the initial writing phase from a practical perspective, but it also had far-reaching implications on how the Hold Steady wanted to write songs.
This is a theory I'm going to put forth that at the beginning of the Hold Steady, we were really, I would say, rediscovering classic rock that we'd all grown up with, but like kind of gotten away from in our 20s, maybe a little bit.
So they're listening to a lot of bands that probably seem obvious if you're a fan. Thin Lizzy, The Rolling Stones, Cheap Trick. But then that changed a bit. You know, once the rooms get bigger, you're playing more shows, things get more complicated, you need a crew. That always starts with one person, the tour manager. He's the guy who keeps things organized, you know, the one that makes sure the trains are running on time. The tour manager they picked up was Craig McQuiston, and here's where Craig Finn's theory comes into play.
I feel like through him, we started to revisit punk and hardcore more and talk about it more. And I think that was got me thinking about how cool hardcore is. And when Tan had the riff for Stay Positive, I was like, let's make a good positive hardcore song. And I also think like from Boys and Girls with things like Massive Nights, the Whoa Whoas, I was like, and playing these big shows, the power of a wordless chorus, like when you're playing live and having people go like, and I was like, I want another song that does that. So, you know, we came up with the whoa.
Yeah.
And I got to Stay Positive. And, you know, I was thinking about things like 7 Seconds and Youth of the Day, stuff I really liked when I was young, and how exciting that is to be a part of, you know, that being a crew of people like that.
When the Youth of the Day and the early 7 Seconds taught me some of life's most valuable lessons.
Yeah, the chorus, it gets everybody involved. Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe that's one of the things also we were learning from all the touring we were doing, that like some of the more simple stuff translates better in a big setting.
That's especially true when you're at the exact point the Hold Steady was, as keyboardist Franz Nicolay says here.
When you're gaining fans and people are seeing you for the first time, when they're hearing your songs for the first time, that's the sort of thing where if they're into the show, they don't have to know all of Craig's lyrics. They can put their fists in the air and go, whoa, you know, and then you already know the song and you can sing along.
I think the more you're doing it, if you're spending half your time on the road, you know, or more than half at that point, you are kind of have to be thinking, at least in the back of your mind, like, how's this going to play? Like, you know, like you don't want to make the intricate record where we're mumbling through something and there's like 14 parts in the song. Unless we're going to go out there with like a video screen that explains it all, you know? So I think it must have. I think it probably was, at least on that record, maybe a populist thing of thinking like, how are these going to connect with the like big audience.
Okay, so now you have bigger choruses and more opportunities for sing-alongs. So in a sense, they're making it more about the people watching from the crowd. But interestingly, the songwriting in other spots went even further in the opposite direction, making some songs more about the inner life of one person on stage. You guessed it, Craig Finn. Up until this point, his lyrics were primarily about building worlds for characters to inhabit, you know, like tiny novels. Now, in spots on Stay Positive, you can actually see Craig becoming the main character. A song like Lord, I'm Discouraged is a perfect example.
I think it's John Gregory Dunn, is that his name? The guy who was married to Joan Didion, said the first character in every novel is the writer. And I believe that to be true, because you're pulling from your, you know. But, you know, you can make up a story about two people in Antarctica, but you're guessing what they're going to act like is based on kind of how you feel. And I've never been to Antarctica, but I think if I wrote a story or a song about that, I think like some of it would have to be me.
Lord, I'm Discouraged goes well beyond that invisible first character. I mean, it's so personal that when you hear it, it's obvious. The song, it's about Craig.
Yeah. I mean, there was very little masking in that one. It was pretty much just what was coming to my head. Stay Positive, I would say, is the one where I started to open up the window. And like, for instance, this song, or even like the song Stay Positive, where there's a me. And I thought that started screwing with the sort of breaking the fourth wall, if you will. And that was something I was like conscious of on Stay Positive. Like, this is kind of interesting. What if I just did appear? What if I said, hey, wait a minute, I'm Craig Finn here, and this is what I think about this. But, you know, back to these people getting subpoenaed in Texas and sequestered in Memphis, you know.
I know I'm no angel. I ain't been bowed that way.
Earlier, the band was talking about, you know, the overt ways touring affected the writing and recording of Stay Positive. You know, having to demo stuff on the road, wanting to incorporate the crowd. And then Craig talked about putting more of his personal experiences into the music. But as it happens, that might have also been at least partially inspired by playing so many shows.
I mean, we were, that festival life sort of becomes part of your thing. And like, you're like, oh my God, you know, like Paul Simonon's in the catering tent. And you see the same bands on the airplanes and the same, you know, start to like see the guy who drove your bus last time. And it's this sort of whole thing that's, dizzying and super fun, but you know, its own new thing. We'd gone in at 2006, 2007, 2008, gone knee deep into like every festival, you know, like literally like at every one. And I think that was creeping into the real life, was creeping into Stay Positive as I review like Stay Positive and magazines, and then even joke about Jamaica, this idea of rock and roll, you know, where it being the central part of your life. It was maybe like a little window into being a little fried on rock and roll, which is, I think by the end of Stay Positive, I think everyone was, the record cycle, everyone was probably a little out of their minds. And I think they had to be, we had to be, but I think that might've been an early window in.
There's one song in particular, I think, that exemplifies being fried on rock and roll for Craig, and that's Slapped Actress.
I was living in this house and my roommate had a Cassavetes box set and I was watching opening night. And I got really into that box set, the Cassavetes. I hadn't seen any of the Cassavetes movies, and which, you know, I'm not really a super film guy, so like I probably should have already by then. But they blew my mind. And I think that they're in, especially like opening night and as well as Killing of a Chinese Bookie, there's this, in both of those, there's a stage. And that they kind of go on stage and come back off stage and sort of relax when they're backstage. And then you, in opening night, sometimes you don't know if they're on stage or not until the camera fades out. And again, this speaks to our lives at that time, where it's like backstage, on stage. We were doing a lot of interviews at the time, not used to do that, you know, previous to Boys and Girls, not used to being like, in the press or saying something that you regretted.
Don't tell my sister about your most recent vision. Don't tell my family they're all wicked, strict Christian. Don't tell the hangers-on.
Opening night really spoke to me of this idea of what it is, you know, all the world's a stage, so to speak. And the scene in particular, Gina Rowlands wants, I can't remember, I think it's Seymour Cassell. He wants to slap her on stage and say, like, I got to slap you. And she said, well, it's a, just fake slap me. And, you know, he's like, no, it'll look fake. And I thought that was like really sort of this interesting metaphor for all of it, you know, and because they were just putting on a play, but he wanted it to look as realistic as possible for the audience. And I thought something's in there that's really cool and telling. I'm not sure what it is, but it became the song. I think probably somewhat influential on the album, or at least my personal headspace, was at the end of Boys and Girls touring, we got Tour Bus. And that is a very, for me, it was a very disorienting feeling. I think when you like go to sleep in Chicago and wake up in Cleveland with no real idea of how you got there, and you know, get up, wake up, and all of a sudden you're in this parking lot and there's nothing around and you're like brushing your teeth in the parking lot, that was very, I mean, it's exciting, but it also, like, I think affected this sort of nonstop travel, I think affected my headspace, and I think crept its way into this record in that way too.
Yeah, the bus is also like, I think it's always some kind of goal for like every band, because it, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we're on a bus now, and not that it means it can be very isolating.
Yeah,
you know, we're like, you're in a van, you're all hanging out, you stop and you eat together, you just, there's more of a camaraderie. You're all listening to the same music, you know, in the van and doing this and that. Where you get on a bus and everybody kind of, you know, slides into their bunk, or is some of them are in the back, somebody's in the front, and it can be tricky that way too, when you're used to kind of hanging out and doing everything as a band.
It's a lot more like a submarine to me than anything else.
Yeah.
As I was talking to Craig and Tad about all the, you know, tiny and not so tiny ways their new road heavy lifestyle ended up informing Stay Positive, it got me wondering, could this record have been made if their lives weren't so busy? And before I even finished asking the question, well, Craig answered it very clearly.
I think Stay Positive would be a different record, but I kind of love it about it. You know, it's like, it's almost like Stay Positive is like, keep going. I know you're tired, but keep going. Yeah.
So the band is living the dream, finally.
But as you can see here, it's hard to anticipate what all those changes are going to end up meaning. And for more than just the songs.
In the next episode, we're going to look at how the band changed, too.
I was a skeptic at first, but these miracles work. I was a skeptic at first, but these miracles work. I was a skeptic at first, but these miracles work.